It's time now for World Watchers International with Mae Brussel, who for over 17 years has investigated and exposed political conspiracies worldwide. World Watchers International originates at KLRB, Carmel, California. Here's Mae.
Good evening. This is Mae Brussel in Carmel, California. This is broadcast number 474, January the 4th, 1981. The first Sunday evening of the new year. This show will be titled the Mae Brussel Comedy Hour instead of the World Watchers this evening and maybe for a few weeks later. I received a letter and a telephone call from one listener who suggested that the solution to the world problems would be to just go out on the streets and laugh. That actually is a childlike approach when matters are very serious, such as looking down the barrel of a gun. But maybe we can turn the news into some funny stories so that he gets his money's worth for this hour looking at the news from the Comedy Hour. I remember when Mort Saul would go to nightclubs holding the daily newspaper and read the news and turn his nightclub act into a hilarious comedy hour. And then after John Kennedy was assassinated and he found the news not very funny and really very serious, people were disappointed in Mort Saul's presentation of his humor, bringing in the assassination and other conspiracies later on. Just for laughs, the hearing of Carlos Marchel of organized crime is going to take place. His trial will begin February the 2nd in New Orleans. The joke is that he's been charged with racketeering, conspiracy, and fraud, and the real charge should be part of murdering John Kennedy and his role with organized crime and the CIA and having President Kennedy murdered. The House Select Committee of Assassinations in 1978 closed their hearings, naming Carlos Marchello and even suggesting the smoking gun going right to his door. So is it a laugh that he's being charged in New Orleans simply for racketeering and conspiracy? They have him on the wrong charges when the government spent $6 million to find out who played a part in killing John Kennedy. For some more laughs, they have Irv Davidson down there as the defendant with Carlos Marchello in this Brilab investigation. The pretrial hearings are closed hearings. The judge has ordered no press and no spectators to see Marchello and Irv Davidson. And that's pretty funny because Irv Davidson, as I've mentioned on other programs, is the connecting link of Jimmy Hoffa, organized crime, Clint Murchison, the Texas oil people, the International Pentagon, National Security Council, combine that were working together to kill John Kennedy. Irv Davidson is a public relations man in Washington, D.C., and the two will get a little slap on the wrist in New Orleans, and that is pretty funny because they'll be out and nothing more will be said about it. They're too high up in government to be held on any charges. So my first prediction for 1981 is that Irv Davidson and Carlos Marchello will walk away with not enough evidence to convict them. Another funny story is a Christmas message Sirhan sent to the Kennedy family this year. He's appealed to get out of Soledad prison. He's been there a long time. He said he paid his debt to society and wished the Kennedys a happy Christmas. He was charged with murdering Senator Robert Kennedy in Los Angeles. He served his time while Thane Caesar put those bullets in the back of Robert Kennedy's head. That's pretty funny to put the wrong guy in there all of this time. Now, various people in the Middle East have suggested that Sirhan be released so, in quotes, he can teach in the various Arab schools and universities as soon as he leaves Soledad in California. So that's pretty funny to see Sirhan, the professor, after he has been educated with the California school system to teach university over in the Middle East. We'll try to keep this funny, but it isn't really very hilarious yet. Iran warned Reagan today on the radio from Tehran, "You better not mess around with the hostages or us." In quotes, Reagan and his colleagues should learn their lesson from Carter's fate. Reagan's threat will fail to browbeat the Muslims of Iran. They will rather have the opposite effect, and if Ronald Reagan goes ahead with his aggressive policies, they might result in the crippling of the Western economy and the destruction of oil wells in the Middle East, which are the lifeline of Western economy. Reagan had better act with restraint. Now, that's pretty funny. That was the front page of the San Francisco Chronicle this morning, a syndicated story, of course, from the UPI. And the important point being, with all the bravado that he has behind him and all the muscle and all Lockheed and Pentagon and Bell Helicopter and Boeing and all the men who make the ammunitions for war, the fact is that there are kamikaze troops trained in Uganda, Libya, Syria, all over the Middle East, Iran, that will blow up every oil well in the Middle East. So they didn't say they'd blow up the wells in Iran. They said the Middle East. So Reagan is going to be immobilized, just as Jimmy Carter was. And if he makes one bad move, the laugh will be on us. The oil that we have would be used for airplanes or for hospital ships or transportation. And it could be in the near future that the United States will be cut off from each other. People in New York will not get to California or back and forth to the East Coast or to the islands, Hawaii or Europe or whatever. If the military oil is cut off, if Reagan makes one bad move, we will be isolated, just as people in France were cut off from Italy or Switzerland during World War II, only it will be worse, because to destroy the oil in the Middle East is a very easy thing to do, given the weapons that they have now and the intent, and they made that clear. An article in the answering this back in the Chronicle by William Randolph Hearst, Jr., a chip off the daddy's old block. He has a story from San Simeon, the Hearst Castle, saying, cut Iran's lifeline. Randolph Hearst paraded Goebbels and Goering and Adolf Hitler and Mussolini in the Hearst newspapers. He built them up as the great heroes of the world. Their escapade cost the European countries their freedom. Russia could move right into Germany, right as far as West Germany. The whole world was disrupted by deaths and refugees and debts of war. The Hearst love these little wars. They sell newspapers. But what guarantee does William Randolph Hearst have that when you cut Iran's lifeline, it stops with Iran? It doesn't stop there. And these people fouled everything up through World War I and II. They want World War III. Their expertise has brought nothing but inflation, high prices, waste, defoliation, pollution, insanity, depression and inflation and unemployment. The Western worlds that have been geared for this warfare mechanic, such as Brazil, Argentina, South America, I mentioned them before, Great Britain, United States, are economically bankrupt, and yet a man like Hearst is egging the Reagan people on from California to cut Iran's lifeline, and he can't give us a signed guarantee that it will stop with Iran. Now, in the next few weeks, there are subjects in the news that I'm going to go to in detail, but I want to cover a few articles that are primary of importance, and I'm going to get back to these, but I have received articles and books and calls from various listeners, and I want to mention these subjects that have been in the news the last few weeks, because we were doing the three-part series on John Lennon's murder, and I'll get back to them. One is the movie The Formula, and also the book that was sent to me by one of my subscribers. The movie The Formula is an interesting picture, and be sure to see it, and then I will discuss with you parts of the book and the movie that I think that are significant. The chief of police is murdered in the movie and in the book. The chief of police of Beverly Hills, who is linked to the oil companies, is the one that I've mentioned on other radio tapes and broadcasts for years. That's Jack Eggers. He actually wasn't murdered, but he was almost murdered with a contract of somebody from Argentina. Jack Eggers was the police chief of Beverly Hills who worked with Bobby Hall and Robert Vesco that supplied the narcotics that kept Howard Hughes drugged until he was kidnapped in 1966 and taken from the Beverly Hills Hotel. The chief of police in Beverly Hills did work with the assassination teams, with the narcotics, gun running. The same people who were doping the rock musicians, Bobby Hall, was asked to investigate by the managers who was giving drugs to their artists. The formula has a basis of truth in it. Also, the movie was made by MGM, and I'm going to share with you an article about various oil companies, Shell Oil, Mobil Oil, and Atlantic Richfield. Mobil, of course, being Standard. They were angry about the film. It seems it came out without their knowing about it until it was just about completed. And right after MGM produced the movie and it was in the can and ready to go, the MGM hotel burnt down in Las Vegas. I believed at the time that it went down too fast, and the towers, the alarm systems were cut off, and I believed that a good suspect would be that arson had set that fire. And I'll share articles about Kirk Kerkorian's dream ending. He wanted to buy Columbia Studio. They're bankrupt with the MGM case and so forth. I believe that the burning of the hotel in Las Vegas, Nevada, of the MGM hotel that will affect their investments in Atlantic City has to do with the fact of the formula being made. Another section of articles I'm going to share with you have to do with Jonestown. Jack Anderson has been coming out with some dynamite articles again lately. He lays dormant for a while and then comes out with bombshells. He had an article just last week on the Angola, CIA involvement in Angola, and Philip Blakey of Jonestown, one of the assassins of the large number of people murdered. Philip Blakey left on the yacht that belonged to Jim Jones. He's still at large, and he worked for the CIA in Angola, as did other people from Jonestown. And the airport that they left from was the Georgetown Airport in South America. Another article I want to go into, several articles, is Robert Vesco. There were rumors he left the Bahamas. Today he said he hadn't left the Bahamas. Vesco is a character in the book The Formula, Mr. Vedesco, and he's one of the most important people, like Carlos Marcello, floating around. The only reason he isn't murdered up to this date, I guess, is because he probably has secreted away all of his documents and evidence. He worked with Mr. Casey, a member of the Reagan cabinet. He's now on the cabinet. He's worked with the top-level government people. He is one of the connecting links, higher than Marcello even, between the CIA and organized crime and the Defense Department. He floats around on his yachts and planes. Allegedly, he's supposed to leave the Bahamas, but he'll probably go to Libya to join Frank Turpel and George Corcola if he isn't murdered before then. There are some more articles. Jack Anderson had one this week on Afghanistan, and the growing of opium poppies being the principal crop in Afghanistan, and how the Soviet Union curtailed production. Those of you who are familiar with my research and my radio programs have said that the reason Jimmy Carter was so angry about the Russians invading Afghanistan wasn't that they interrupted the life expectancy, the production, the economy. It wasn't a fruitful economy. The life expectancy there is about 37. The women are kept in slavery. It's run by tribes whose main production is opium, and there was a traffic through the Middle East that the Georgia Mafia and a group of people were enjoying that went through Pakistan, Afghanistan, and Turkey and was flooding Europe with the narcotics. And when the Soviet Union came down and took their paws and took Afghanistan, it interrupted the poppy growth, which sends these people in a tizzy, because we're talking about hundreds of millions of dollars of profit in their pocket. And this is what the reason I think Carter was so angry about Soviet Union going into Afghanistan. It was more logical that they overthrow Afghanistan than that the CIA kill Allende to put Pinochet into power way over in Chile, which hardly is a border next to the United States. The question of Afghanistan has been a question of narcotic war, and Jack Anderson has an article on that today. Also, there are articles about Portugal and the recent murder of Sá Carneiro. Richard Allen on Ronald Reagan's team was a lobbyist for Portugal. With the CIA, he denied certain massacres that were taking place. He's very much involved with Portugal, and they had a political murder last week. I want to do more on that. And finally, in a few weeks, I want to get specifically just one program about Alexander Haig. I've promised to update the work I did last year or the year before on Alternative 3. Those are the space colonies that are being built to, in quotes, siphon off the Earth's population. I called Louise Kaplan, the co-author of that book, The Domesday or Doomsday Dictionary. I called her New York this week because that book was published in 1963, and in it they had such wonderful insight into things that were happening now that I learned about in the last few years, but they were publishing in 1963, and one of them was the space stations to siphon our population off. And I asked her where she got this, and she said from Albert Kahn's book from the Congressional Record. In the 60s, they were talking about building space colonies. The New York Times has a long article, December the 5th, this past December the 5th, on United Technologies. That's the company that General Haig is the president of that is making the construction for the space stations. He's very much involved with the L5 Society, with Barry Goldwater, with the secret moon treaties that other countries can't inspect the space stations when they're built. Alexander Haig has worked with Nazi scientists, with American technology, and our Secretary of State is now president of United Technology and has been trying to do away with the moon treaty and the inspection of these places. After Auschwitz and Dachau and the concentration camps in Germany, we should never allow secret defense establishments or housing facilities to be secret any longer. We should always be aware of slave labor, which is taking place in the Middle East today and in Africa, but we should be particularly aware of those scientists who worked at Pundamont or Dora or in Europe with concentration camp slave labor who are alive today and who are building these stations. Those will be programs that I will be doing in the future in much greater detail, but I want you to know that articles are coming out and that I'm saving them and have enough material now, but not enough time. I want to do a few more comments about musicians, not on John Lennon specifically, but just a few more follow-ups, and we'll be doing more on the motives and the government operations to do away with the musicians. There's an article this November in the New York Daily News, one of my listeners sent to me, called Evel Younger from the Wild West is heading for the Capitol role. And the article says, so look who's heading the Ronald Reagan Task Force on Law and Order. Evel Younger, California Attorney General. Younger, as the Attorney General under Governor Ronald Reagan, reported the comings and goings of political activists such as Jane Fonda, Joan Baez, Tom Hayden, Cesar Chavez, the Jewish Defense League, the Black Panthers, and music fans who attended rock concerts. It wasn't enough to know who the artists were, but the people who attended, they put this into computers that went into data banks from the Los Angeles Police Department into Utah. I've done many shows on Evel Younger and will do more later. Another article, The Kitchen Cabinet Hails a Chief. This is from the LA Times, and it's an article about Mr. Meese, the head of Reagan's cabinet, being honored, and it's a National Education Institute and a group called Law at Work, and photographed with him as Mr. and Mrs. Evel Younger. Evel Younger is a general in the Army. He's a retired FBI man. And if one single man worked along with Ronald Reagan in the terrorism in California, this Younger is the guy to nail. If you want to do research on Younger, go to your library and look up everything you can under his name and begin putting it together, because he will be appointed as a justice of the Supreme Court or director of the FBI, and then heaven help us. You can look up stories on the Manson family, on the Robert Kennedy assassination, on George Jackson murder, the Glass House tapes by Lewis Tackwood. They're endless books. Younger's team and Ed Davis of the Criminal Conspiracy Section in Los Angeles manipulated a spate of murders and shootouts, and the purpose was to discredit the blacks, the United Prisoners Union, the Black Panthers, and the gay liberation, you name it, the American Indian movement, everything that was liberal or anti-war particularly, or again the rock concerts, was bugged and followed and reported. The people who were interested in these activities. Another article in the Star that you get on the counters of the grocery stores and drug stores, John Lennon's Secret Affair. This is an article about his falling in love with a woman for 18 months. And it ended in 1975 when Yoko suggested that John go to a hypnotist and get over this crazy thing that he was doing. So she set up the appointment, and after his first session with the hypnotist, John, spellbound, went back to Yoko and never saw May Pang again. I could say more on this. Those of you who know my suspicious mind can draw conclusions, and I'll do more on this subject later. One other thing, Jackie Onassis assisted Yoko Ono in getting John's son Julian to come to the United States right after John was murdered. I talked about odd couples last week. The oddest couple of all are Jackie Onassis and Yoko Ono, and I could just about give 30 parallels of the Lennon murder to the Kennedy assassination. One of the people who subscribes to my tapes in Santa Barbara sent me a copy of an article he wrote in 1979 on the FBI investigation of Jimi Hendrix. That's one of the rock musicians who was making concerts for the anti-war movement in 1969. He had a concert for the Chicago conspiracy trial in April 25th of 1969. He was helping Tom Hayden and Abby Hoffman and those people against the war, the Vietnam War, in 1968, and giving benefit concerts. So the FBI made out documents on Jimi Hendrix, and under the Executive Order 11652, in the interest of national defense and foreign policy, they have many files, many lines are blocked out, and they started an information file 163 on Hendrix, but they don't explain in the FBI documents what 163 is. But there were national security reasons, and they had a security index on Jimi Hendrix, not for any police records, but the security index the FBI had is a master warrant for thousands of Americans who the FBI calls subversive, who would be rounded up and put in concentration camps in the event of a national emergency, and Jimi Hendrix was one of those. He was going to the new Moog anti-war march to play. He played November the 11th, 1969. In Washington, D.C., Jimi Hendrix was mentioned that he was scheduled to appear. This was in the FBI files in 1969, and in 1970, Jimi Hendrix was dead. He died in London, allegedly over some vomit in his sleep. But the person who wrote this article, Merv Glass, along with John Raymond, noted that Fred Hampton in Chicago was drugged by an FBI man before they broke in the place and gunned him down. The FBI man said that they drugged him so that he wouldn't resist, so that he was given by his so-called best friend drugs, and then he fell asleep, and then the FBI came in and murdered Fred Hampton and Mark Clark Wright in Chicago, and the FBI had many reasons for murdering them, and there have been lawsuits on that. Jimi Hendrix was under surveillance of the FBI, and Merv Glass has these documents, and so was Janis Joplin and many other rock musicians, along with Ethel Younger's file of those who attended the concerts. Another article this week, Christian music is suddenly big business. It goes into Donna Summers, Bob Dylan, Al Green, B.J. Thomas, and various musicians. They have a large number of albums. There's approximately 15 Christian album makers right now. There's Christian radio stations. ABC Network has their own Christian record company. MCA Universal has their Christian record company. They have charts for white contemporary Christian music or the black gospel Christian music, even in religious terms. They're separated. There's 7,000 radio stations in America. 1,400 are playing the Christian music right now. That would be another reason for wiping out all of these anti-war musicians or people working for peace and bring on the Christian music and let's get off to war. Gary Paxton, a songwriter and producer, was shot in Nashville. Somebody came to his door, two men who wanted help with a tire. He went outside, and he was in a scuffle with these people. One of the men who tried to kill him was from Hampton, Georgia. Last time I read about him this week, it was just the 2nd of January, Gary Paxton was in intensive care. And Tim Hardin, the protege of Bobby Darin, the folk singer, he wrote in the late 60s, Tim Hardin died this week. I have no follow-up of what he died from. He died in Los Angeles. I read that they were going to do an autopsy on him. The conclusions have not been published. He wrote If I Were a Carpenter and other songs. They weren't very controversial, but I understand he just cut a new record with one of the bigger record companies. But like the other musicians who've died on the eve of their new big possible successes, Tim Hardin died last week. Ronald Reagan is very much linked up with the Reverend Moon Organization. And now I'm going to jump away from musicians to Christians again, because along the line of Christian music, I want to mention the influence of Reverend Moon on Ronald Reagan and the new administration that is pushing for Christian government. I'll list some of the things they want in terms of Christian government. There were three articles in the paper this week. One, Bohemian Club Flack. This was about a dinner to honor the president of the Moon Organization, the Unitarian Church. The Bohemian Club was to give the honors and the invitation, and the invitations were actually sent out from the Unification Church in Berkeley. So they had to quickly change and have it at the Mark Hopkins Hotel in San Francisco. The invitations came from the American Council for the International Promotion of Democracy Under God, run by the Mooney Organizations. Members of the American Council for International Promotion of Democracy Under God, along with the Moon Organization, are such people as Henry Luce III, Vice President of Time and Life, Claire Giannini Hoffman, Vice President of Bank of America, John Volpe, former Massachusetts governor, and it's a New York-based organization of wealthy, prominent citizens who also help support Catholic University in Rome. Another article from New York Magazine, ex-Mooney is running the Heritage Foundation. Michael Warden, who worked his way up in the Mooney Organization from 1969 to 1980, is now official head of the Heritage Foundation, which is the domestic advisor to Ronald Reagan, the Washington think tank. Another article in the Los Angeles Times, the conservative think tank, the Heritage Foundation, moves into the Capitol to influence Reagan's administration. This is an LA Times article last week. Among the things they want to do, this Christian Mooney Heritage Foundation, is unleash the CIA, increase defense spending, use food as a foreign policy weapon, restore Congressional Internal Security Committee, roll back federal programs for minorities, curtail the federal regulatory agencies such as Clean Air or Occupational Safety, cut taxes, and cut all non-defense spending. Now, that is right from the Heritage Foundation, run by the Mooney Organization, that is very much supported the American Council for the International Promotion of Democracy Under God. There are very reasonable people pushing for these programs. And finally, there was an article in the paper today, Reverend Moon is Cupid for 843 couples in New York. He's matched 1,600 persons who never met each other. They come from faraway places like Canada and Australia. They're going to have a wedding day ceremony soon for 10,000 couples that Reverend Moon has fixed up. And they said in the newspaper they prefer to have their church founder suggest the match who they marry. We consider it a privilege to be involved in such a large ceremony. Now, you talk about mind control. Reverend Moon made gunpowder in South Korea. He was linked to money directly from Adolf Hitler. He is in this country with huge nonprofit organizations, newspapers, fisheries, and industries because it's a church. He doesn't pay American taxes. And he's going to marry 10,000 couples that he designated should mate each other, and each of them accepts that as a privilege. Now, that's pretty funny. That's the first half of the Mae Brussel Comedy Hour. We're going to take a 60-second break, 1 minute to stop laughing, and then we'll get back to the second half of this program.
International with Mae Brussel. We will return with the second half after a brief pause.